Hello and welcome to the Thursday, August 24th edition of Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from Alaska's capital city, specifically the KTOO studios. Jeff Brown, the producer and engineer of the show, has put together a fantastic afternoon to share with all of you. We'll chat with Jim Powell from UIS, Kevin Meyer about the upcoming Southeast Alaska Land Trust Fly Casting Workshop, and then we'll find out about the Salmon Beyond Borders Southeast Fest, and then Juno World's Fair Council on Friday, and with Nancy DeCharney with Arts Up. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Recent discussions of removing Confederate statues across the country is reigniting a push in San Francisco to take down ones honoring settlers. Christina Onnestad has more.
Native activists and supporters are calling on San Francisco city officials to remove what's called the Pioneer Monument. They spoke out at a recent public meeting.
This monument is definitely glorifying Spanish colonization of Native Americans. We have a Spanish vaquero who's got his fist pumping in the air, and he's standing triumphantly over a Native American laying on the ground.
And to see that breaks my heart, because that's not what my people and my culture is about. And to me, it's just a big disgrace.
Pioneer Monument was dedicated in 1894. More than a century later, to appease Native American scrutiny, city officials located a plaque at the base of it describing the negative impact settlers had on Native Americans in California. But critics say the plaque isn't enough and want the statue's removal. City officials plan to discuss the issue in October. That gives organizers time to plan. Some are also eyeing a statue of Columbus. Christina Onnestad, National Native News.
Yale University will remove a stone carving of a settler pointing a gun at a Native American, the New Haven Register reports. Yale officials said this week the carving will be taken down from a library and placed in a location where it can be studied. The carving is an architectural feature attached to a wall, which acts as a support structure. Native students say the university should also acknowledge the history of indigenous people whose land the New Haven, Connecticut institution sits on. Federal officials have cleared the Navajo Nation Housing Authority of financial mismanagement and other alleged wrongdoing. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports it follows a recent investigation into the agency's operations.
The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development issued its final report this week on the tribal agency that provides housing to members. HUD investigators traveled to Arizona and New Mexico earlier this year to inspect contractor agreements and housing plans and conduct interviews. They concluded the Navajo Housing Authority is in compliance with federal regulations and statutes. The review, however, did find that a developer agreement from 2001 caused a housing project on the reservation to remain unoccupied. The tribe says it's since reformed many policies. An Arizona Republic investigative series last year triggered the federal review. It described misuse of billions in federal funds within the Housing Authority, along with fraud and waste. According to the Navajo Housing Authority, it's the largest rural housing agency in the U.S. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heiches in Flagstaff.
A group in Rhode Island is occupying land which is owned by Brown University. An encampment was set up on Sunday claiming the land is ancestral territory of the Pokanoket Nation. Brown University officials met with some people occupying the area this week. In a statement, the university says it wants to focus on safety at the camp and work towards a resolution. The land is located in Bristol, Rhode Island, about 16 miles from the college campus in Providence. A music video paying tribute to the Standing Rock movement is nominated for an MTV Video Music Award. The video is included in the new category Best Fight Against the System. The song was recorded by Taboo of the Black Eyed Peas and several Native artists, including Superman and MC1. According to the artist, the song supports those who embrace the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe in its fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline. The MTV Video Music Awards will air live from California on Sunday. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by BNSF Railway, proud partners of the American Indian Science and Education Society's National Conference, September 21st to 23rd, helping prepare the next generation of STEM leaders. More at bnsf.com/tribalrelations.
Yate, support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitor planning services to Native American conventions. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
It is 6 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from Alaska's capital city, KTOO Studios. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Partist, and with us in the studio is Jim Pell. He's here to talk about University of Alaska Southeast. We usually kick off our Thursday show with the UAS Corner, and thank you, Jim, for coming to town.
Thanks for inviting me, and thanks for your work here, Joan and Jeff. Really appreciate you guys.
Back at you, Jim.
Yeah.
So what's going on with our local university, our local and state university?
Yeah, well, out at UAS, it's next week, classes start on Monday.
Off
and running. Professors are back, getting busy, and we have what's called convocation this week, and we all got together and had some meetings about education and what we're going to do this next year, calendar year and academic year. So anyway, I'm here to talk about the Master of Public Administration program, which is one of the three master level programs that we have at UAS here.
What are the other two?
Education and continuing ed.
Okay.
And the Master of Public Administration program really fits Alaska well because we do distance and it's live. It's not, you know, recorded and then, you know, you don't talk to a professor. It's live once a week for our classes. And it really hits a demographic that really fits for Alaska. And that is, okay, you went to college, you worked a while, and then you want some more education because you're curious about learning or you want to build your skills, basic skills in writing. So that's what it's about, building those kind of skills, but in public administration. And we have a lot of people that do public work. And it doesn't just apply to public jobs and agencies and local, state, and federal agency. It also applies to business world, too, because we use business practices. So anyway, this semester, we're continuing our program, and we're lucky enough. Our program actually had exponential growth over the last 5 years, and it's one of the few programs that has grown that much. And the reason is because we give a quality education. We have smaller classes. We usually don't go above 15. That's our target. Sometimes we do. It's live, and that's different from some distance programs. And so we reach people all over. It's kind of cool. We reach people from us talking to a student in Barrow today. So we're all over the place. And that fits for Alaska because they can't get, you know, they're spread all over the place many miles all over the place. So this semester we teach seven classes and basic intro to public administration, research classes in economics and organizational theory. But we've got four what we call special topics, and those are around things that are going on that are timely, you might say. Local and global sustainability, which I teach, and I think it's very interesting, or I wouldn't be teaching it, of course. And there's one in government nonprofits, and I think that that's really important to this world. In fact, in our state, we have over 7,000 nonprofits in the state of Alaska.
That's amazing.
And they're particularly getting hit right now because a lot of that was hit because of state funding. And that's reduced. So they're trying to figure out doing things.
And federal funding for the ones that are federally funded as well.
Right. So, I mean, they want to get more efficient. How do you do that? How do you manage really well?
How do you adapt into a new playing field?
Exactly. So local and global sustainability, a nonprofit class, and then I teach a role of city managers. As you guys know, I used to work in the city as an assembly member, and I have an MPA as well as a PhD. And so I teach that class. And then Intro to Higher Education. It's really strange getting a PhD because you don't have a class in how to teach. They give you a PhD and they go, teach. So we have classes in how to teach in higher education now, which is really good. So those are the classes that we have. And I think they're very interesting and very timely, all of those.
Sounds great. So I have questions about the MPA program. So if somebody's listening and they say, oh, that class sounds interesting, I am assuming, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, which is possible, that you could take classes a la carte. You could become part of the matriculated graduate program. Is that true?
To start, yeah. Because it's a master's degree program, we allow students into the program if they've had an undergraduate education, of course. But we allow folks to take up to two classes before we say, hey, you know, our time is valuable, yours is, do you want to commit or not?
That sounds really fair.
So,
a good testing period for everyone involved.
Right. And the program itself is a 36-hour program or 12 classes, and 9 are required, and then you can pick the other 3 classes up for your electives.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of flexibility, but there's a core group of classes that you need to take to get the MPA class.
All right, yeah. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so all the classes, undergraduate and graduate, start on Monday.
That's right, coming up Monday.
All right, and how many classes are you teaching?
Teaching 3 this semester.
So what's the other one? You have the city manager and the local and global sustainability.
Right, organizational theory. I teach one of those sections, and that's a lot of fun too. How do organizations behave, and how do we make it more efficient? You might say, public agencies, which everyone is important to have, of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for coming in. If you're just joining us, we're chatting with Dr. Powell from the University of Alaska Southeast. And if people want to find out more information, where can they look it up online or call?
Everything's online. They could call 796-6100 for information, and they'll get right to the admissions office. And it's not too late to sign up. We encourage folks to sign up. We believe in education because that's what's going to keep civilization going, I think.
Absolutely. And we're so grateful that UAS is here and everything that the university does for our community. It's a great community resource. All right. We're going to take a short break. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, you guys.
And
keep doing what you're doing.
We'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 24th of August, 2017. Mount Vesuvius erupted on this day in the year 79, destroying the city of Pompeii, which was about 5 miles away from the mountain resort town. The elite of Rome came out there. About 20,000 people lived in and around Pompeii at the time. Most of them escaped relatively unscathed. About 5,000 people died, most likely from a blast of blistering hot, poisonous gas. The remains of the city and the nearby city of Herculaneum, rediscovered in the 18th century, almost completely intact, buried under about 23 feet of volcanic debris. It's the baptismal day of the poet Robert Herrick, born in London, 1591, who gave us the lines, "Gather ye rosebuds while ye may, old time is still a-flying, and this same flower that smiles today, tomorrow will be dying," in his poem, "To the Virgins to Make Much of Time." He lived out in the country for many years, wrote most of his poetry out there, never married, and most of the women in his poems were probably imaginary. It was on this day in the year 410, Rome was sacked by the Visigoths, bringing an end to the Roman Empire, which at its height had stretched from Britain and the Atlantic to North Africa and Mesopotamia. The Visigoths came down from what is now Germany, led by their chieftain Alaric, who was in his mid-30s. They were incensed at the higher and higher taxes the Romans had exacted on the people in their outer provinces. So they started moving toward Rome. Alaric also wanted some position of respect within the empire. He had laid siege to the city of Rome. The Roman Senate paid him off, but when his demands were repeatedly rebuffed, he came back, waged an all-out attack, and Roman slaves rebelled. Many of them had been captured from Germanic tribes, and they opened the gates to Alaric in the middle of the night, and the Visigoths came in and burned and looted and raped and pillaged, though they did treat Christian sites and relics with some respect. It was on this day in 1456 the first edition of the Gutenberg Bible was bound and completed in Mainz, Germany, first complete book printed with movable type. Today is the birthday of the Argentinian poet and short story writer Jorge Luis Borges, born in Buenos Aires in 1899, who, with his book of short stories, A Universal History of Infamy, in 1935, gave us what we now call magical realism. Here's a poem for today by Lewis Jenkins entitled Lucky. All my life I've been lucky. Not that I made money or had a beautiful house or cars, but lucky to have had good friends, a wife who loves me, and a good son. Lucky that war and famine or disease did not come to my doorstep. Lucky that all the wrong turns I made, even if they didn't turn out well, at least were not complete disasters. I still have some of my original teeth. All that could change, I know, in the wink of an eye. And what an eye it is, bright blue, contrasting with her dark skin and black hair. And oh, what long eyelashes. She turns, and with a slight smile, gives me a long, slow wink, a wink that says, come on over here, you lucky boy. A poem by Lewis Jenkins, Lucky, from In the Sun, Out of the Wind, published by Will-o'-the-Wisp Books, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available on iOS devices. Subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's summer, and Alaska Clean Harbors invites boating locals to help keep our waters clean and our wildlife healthy by using pump outs, scooping your pup's poop, and putting waste in its proper place. Find out more and get a free pump-out adapter for your boat at alaskacleanharbors.org. This message brought to you with funding from the United States Fish and Wildlife Service Clean Vessel Act through the Alaska Clean Water Actions Program.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO and the weather. Right now, we are looking at scattered showers. It's going to rain tonight, low around 50. Chance of precipitation is 100%. Tomorrow, rain before 7 a.m. and then showers after, say, 7 a.m., high near 55. And chance of precipitation is 100% again, and the same for Friday night. So here we are in August in Juneau, Alaska. As you know, Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Partis, and our next guest is Allison Gillum. She is here representing the Southeast Alaska Land Trust, where she works as the executive director. Hi, Allison.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, before we get started about the upcoming events and activities, can you tell us a little bit about the Southeast Alaska Land Trust?
Sure. It's a private nonprofit organization here in town that covers all of Southeast Alaska, but we're basically a land conservation organization. We work to protect land throughout Southeast Alaska.
Okay. And then you've partnered with Trout Unlimited for an upcoming event. What's that all about?
Yeah, this is the third year we've done this fly casting workshop out at one of our properties on North Douglas Highway. And Kevin Meyer, who's the president of the Juneau chapter of Trout Unlimited, has graciously agreed yet again this year to bring out a few people to learn how to fly cast. And he's an awesome guide and also a teacher over at UAS, which is why he's not here today to talk about the workshop with us. He's busy getting ready for school to start on Monday.
Is there any space left in that workshop?
So unfortunately, the workshop is full. It sold out in about 3 hours after we sent out our email about it.
Fishing enthusiasts.
I know. I know. If you're interested in receiving those emails notifying you of events that we're putting on, become a member of the Southeast Alaska Land Trust, or you can sign up on our website to receive our mailings.
Okay. And then what else is on the horizon?
Yeah, so...
the immediate horizon.
So where the workshop, the fly casting workshop is taking place is our property called the Marjorie and Edgar Heiser Fishing Access Site. And this is a property we purchased back in 2015. It's about a quarter acre, not very big, but the sole purpose of it was to provide access to Gastineau Channel and the refuge. It's right at the southern tip of the refuge right there. And so we purchased this property and have plans to enhance it, to have some parking, some stairs down to the beach for access, potentially a bench, a kiosk, that kind of stuff. So we've been fundraising for this project. So that's one of the reasons I wanted to come on today and just let people know that this is an awesome project that's happening. North Douglas Highway is very restricted in terms of access down to the channel and the refuge in that area. It's basically all privately owned. So we're excited to offer another option for the general public here in Juneau to access the refuge.
Okay. And how can people donate to this project?
Yeah, so our website is www.southeastalaskalandtrust.org, and there's a whole bunch of information on our website about the project, links to donate. You can also just send a check to our office, 119 Seward Street, Suite 2, right downtown. So that's where you could find out more information about it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So the fly casting workshop is full. I guess you're probably not starting a waiting list on that.
We actually do have a waiting list. It's pretty long already. But it's happening this Saturday, so we're hoping that the rain might give us a little break on Saturday. I don't know if we went that far with the weather.
Chance of precipitation is only 70% on Saturday.
Oh, 70%.
So
that's
good. Yeah. We're near 70%. Well, that sounds great. Well, Allison, thanks for coming by. Come by anytime.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
And keep us posted on what's going on.
Yeah, we will.
All right.
Thanks
we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
This is Bird Note. As the sun sets off Maui, washing the ocean in crimson, a pair of Hawaiian petrels calls. Crow-sized seabirds with long, slender wings, the petrels sit at the mouth of their nest burrow, dug high in the rim of Haleakala volcano. One petrel flies out, winging rapidly toward the ocean. At the coast, it passes over a blowhole where the sea explodes through a gap in the rocks. The petrel glides low over the dark ocean, snatching squid from the surface. This foraging flight may take 2 days, even a week. Then the petrel flies back to the nest at night, crossing above the surf line, ascending to the mountaintop nest burrow. Here, it feeds a single chick. Hatched in July, the chick grows rapidly, and in December will be ready to join the adult petrels for a life at sea. The soundscapes featured in today's show were recorded by Gordon Hempton and provided courtesy of QuietPlanet.com.
It is 24 past the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. And in the studio with us, we have two people here to talk about the Salmon Beyond Borders Southeast Fest. We have Erin Heist and Matt Karen. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Okay. So you've got an event coming up.
We do. On Tuesday, we've got Taku Tuesday. So it's presented by, what are we calling it? The Southeast Feast. So this is a benefit for Salmon Beyond Borders. We're a nonprofit organization supported by tribal groups, commercial fishermen, sports fishermen, interested parties, and we're really focused on our transboundary rivers here in Southeast. So we've got really great business partners who are helping us put on Taku Tuesday, which is going to be kind of two simultaneous events. So it's going to have a party feel all on 2nd Street. We've got oysters and cocktails at Amalga Distillery.
Oh, my.
And then we've got a kind of beautiful plate of seafood that's going to be prepared by Bo Schooler in Boca al Lupo.
Oh, yay.
Yeah.
That sounds lovely.
It's going to be really cool. So you can get tickets for either event or both events. Tickets are $30 for each event. And I think we were just talking about this. We still have a couple of tickets available for the oysters and cocktails hour. So $30 gets you 4 oysters and 2 cocktails. Everything lovingly crafted for you and with all local sources. And then for the tickets for Boca al Lupo for that seafood plate, it's $30. And I think there's more tickets still available for that particular event.
Okay. So what time does it start?
So the dinner in Boca al Lupo will start at 6:30. And the oyster hours, there's 2 different oyster cocktail hours, and that's from 5:30 to 6:30 is the first hour, and then from 6:30 to 7:30 is the second hour.
Okay. So, Matt, where can people get tickets?
Tickets are available at Amalga Distillery for the oyster and cocktail hour.
They're at the Rookery Cafe.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
For the dinner, you can get tickets at Rookery Cafe. For the oysters and cocktail hour, you can get tickets at Amalga Distillery.
Okay.
But Matt here is one of our business partners. He's with Barnacle Foods, and they're going to be one of our featured sort of businesses at this event because they're really great partners for Salmon Beyond Borders. So I was hoping, is it cool if Matt talks a little bit about Barnacle? And
I would love to do that. So tell us all about Barnacle Foods.
Yeah, thanks for having us. We're really excited to be involved in this year's Taku Tuesday Southeast Feast event and have great partners like Salmon Beyond Borders and Amalga Distillery, Boca al Lupo to partner with. So we're kind of the new member of that group, Barnacle Foods, and we're making foods from local ingredients such as bull kelp salsas, pickles, and we'll also have some dried seasoning blends coming soon. And yeah, Barnacle is really all about using some of our local delicious edibles that we have here in Southeast Alaska and preserving them and sharing them with our community and beyond.
Yeah, that sounds great. And people could check out your goods at the port, right?
That's right, yeah.
So that's right behind the library, and it's open during tourist season, correct?
Yep, that'll be open seasonally probably through the end of September.
Yeah.
And then are you guys also at the food festival doodad this weekend?
Yeah.
Okay.
This weekend, kind of a special local foods event. Down at the Jack on Saturday from 9 to 1 p.m. We'll be down there and have a lot of our kelp products available, and we actually will have a special release of a local kale product that will be available to taste there kind of just for that event. So
it'll
be a really fun event and lots of local produce and preserves and arts and crafts, so definitely worth checking out.
Sounds cool. Yeah. So there you have it. 3 events talked about with 2 guests right here. We've got the food fest at the Jack this Saturday, and then 2 like lovely, lovely events on Tuesday.
And so those tickets have been going pretty fast.
I would imagine.
So definitely if you're interested, it's going to be a really cool event. There's so many great partners. So there's Barnacle Foods. We're also featuring Taku River Reds, which is their sockeye bellies are going to be featured in the plate that Bo's putting together. For the oysters at Amalga, we've got Kau oysters, which again are local oysters. And I just want to mention also that ASME has been a great partner for this event in supporting us with the purchase of Taku River Reds sockeye. So yeah, there's kind of a lot of pieces to it. But altogether, it's just going to be a really good evening.
It sounds great. So if people want to find out more information, they can get tickets at Imelga Distillery and the Rookery, which, of course, owns both restaurants, Imelga di Lupa, if I said it maybe right, and Rookery. And but if they want to find out about Salmon Beyond Borders, where can they check you out online?
So salmonbeyondborders.org is our website. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. We're kind of all over the place. That's what's really neat about this is all these businesses are supporting Salmon Beyond Borders, which we're really focused on raising awareness of this issue that there's kind of a gold boom happening in BC right now, and there are major, major, crazy huge mines in development on the BC side and the headwaters of some of our most important rivers. So the Taku, the Stikine, and the Unik are all transboundary rivers, and they produce a huge amount of the salmon that are produced here in Southeast. And we're an organization that's trying to bring together a bunch of different voices to get the attention of the federal government to say that we really need to defend Alaskan way of life, which here in Southeast depends on healthy salmon and healthy water. So all the businesses involved also believe strongly in sustaining this kind of beautiful environment and all the beautiful food that we get out of it. So it's a celebration, and it's also sort of a great way for us to raise awareness of the issue.
Yeah, well, sounds like it's going to be a great event.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, thank you so much for coming in. We appreciate your time, and get your tickets. You should, like, start right now.
Yeah.
Downtown. Go get your tickets. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
In Southeast, children learn about culture and tradition by watching those in action. Dancing, drumming, fishing, and harvesting teach healthy behaviors for future generations. Tobacco is not part of our culture. Don't let it be part of yours. For free support quitting, contact Alaska's Tobacco Quitline at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or alaskaquitline.com. This message is brought to you by the Partnership for Tobacco-Free Southeast and Search.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It is 26 minutes to the hour. Right now it is saying it's high near 57 and scattered showers. We've been through this. It's 100% precipitation until Saturday when its chance of precipitation is 70%. But it's not raining now, so what do they know? Anyway, in the studio with Jeff and I, we have Carl Brodesen of the Juneau World Affair Council and Leon Claire from the Sitka Conservation Society, and they're here to talk about what's going on tonight downstairs in the 360 studios at 5 p.m. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks. So, Leon... Actually, let's start with Carl, if we can. Let's talk a little bit about the Juneau World Affair Council, and then we'll talk with Leon, who's your guest speaker tonight.
Well, I just happen to have a pre-prepared paragraph about what we do.
Well, aren't you prepared?
Aren't I indeed? The Juneau World Affairs Council is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization whose mission is to encourage dialogue and understanding of important international, economic, political, and social issues by arranging and hosting presentations by outside experts. JWAC brings the world to Juneau.
They also host... What is it?
World Quest.
And Carl makes the questions. So, yes, call the station, and if you have a question, bring it to Carl, and he'll think if it does get belonged, because those questions are really wacky.
Why, thank you. Coming up in February.
Yes, I know. I am looking forward to it. So, Leon, I read about you on the web. So you are living in Sitka, correct?
Yeah, well, I was born and raised in Sitka. I'm in college, but I'm home for the summer.
Right. You're going to the University of Montana?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you've been interested in photography since you've been, like, 13 or 14 years
mm-hmm.
old?
Correct.
And you had some training. You got accepted into some programs. And recently you went to Vietnam.
Correct.
Okay. But you have a specific slant about your photography. You want to talk about your art?
Specific slant. Yeah, I guess it's kind of more of a story that I'm trying to tell with my photos in terms of this project and presentation, and kind of, I guess, working to share everything that I learned while I was studying in Vietnam through photographs and a little bit of text in a kind of effective way.
Okay. But you have a specific interest in environmental.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You want to talk about that a little
yeah,
bit?
Yeah. So I guess growing up in Sitka, obviously fell in love with the environment at a young age and have always been interested in nature photography and environmental kind of
impact.
Advocacy and yeah, and climate change specifically, which I'm studying in college. And so this project is focused on communicating those climate change impacts as well as mitigation and adaptation strategies that are happening in the Mekong Delta.
Fascinating. So you said you were studying in Vietnam, so you went with some program?
Yeah, it was a winter session study abroad program for about a month, and there was 9 students and 1 instructor.
Okay. This photo story that you, this presentation you'll do tonight at 5 o'clock, which you have to go to, we're not going to cover it all here. it's hard to say. I imagine that there's a lot of photographs, but what were some of your initial reactions to when you arrived there, and how did they change over that month?
Yeah, well, I being like a primarily environmental nature photographer, I was really interested on what climate change impacts were impacting the environment there, like the natural environment. But I realized over the course of the program and our studies that humans were a really important connection to the environment. Everything that's happening to the environment is affecting humans directly in agriculture and food security. And those are some of the things I'll talk about. And I realized that humans were going to be important to include in the photo story.
Okay. Let's talk about food security for 1 second. Is there one element that you want to share here that...
Mostly, I guess, well, the biggest impact of climate change in the Mekong Delta is saltwater intrusion because of sea level rise, and that is impacting rice, which is a really important staple food source for Vietnam and Southeast Asia. And so that's kind of the main concern in terms of food security is impacts and then what adaptation strategies can be used for to keep growing rice and sustaining food sources.
That sounds huge.
Yeah.
That sounds huge. So how did you two... meet or have you worked together before?
We met about 3 minutes ago in the lobby. Exceptional timing.
Except for over email.
Well, true. Yeah, she was very patient with a month's worth of, can you maybe, let me get back to you about this other thing. Oh, how about now? How about this? How about this? Et cetera. One of our board members read the KTO article about her presentation in Sitka recently and recommended her, and we followed up from there, and she was willing to come over, and we're very appreciative.
That's great. When do you go back to school?
Next Saturday.
Okay.
That's why we're doing it now.
Yeah.
It sounds great. So that is 5 o'clock tonight at downstairs at the 360 North Studios. And, Leon, let's talk about how your path to becoming the photographer you are right now. So you kind of
long story short?
Yeah,
okay.
That would be good.
Well, I started off kind of as a job shadow internship with James Polson at the Daily Sitka Sentinel when I was 14 and 15 during those summers. And then my mom reached out to a woman who had taken a workshop from Tim Gray, who's a photographer in New York City, and connecting me with him. And he's kind of like the source of a lot of connections and opportunities since then. I attended Maine Media Workshops, and then he wrote me a letter of recommendation for the North American Nature Photography Association High School Scholarship Program, which I got in high school, one of 10 students that were selected for that. And that was a huge experience. And then that led to a photography safari opportunity in Tanzania in my freshman year of college. And kind of all those big experiences have taught me a lot about photography and expanded my, I guess, photography skills and across different types of photography. And then I work at the Sitka Conservation Society in the summers, and I do a lot of kind of environmental photojournalism and communication about wilderness importance through photography. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds great. And you're going back to what year of school?
My last semester. I'm graduating. I'm going to be a senior, but graduating early. So.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Last semester is fun. Of anything, right?
Yeah.
Last semester is great. So, Leon, if people should come tonight at 5 o'clock and check it out at the 360 North Studios. It's hosted by the Juno World's Affair Council. But people want to look you up online. Do you have I'm sure you have a web presence. Where's a good place to check out your work?
Yeah, just leonclairephotography.com. And there's a stories and projects blog tab, which features the photo story, like the digital version of this Vietnam photo story. So.
Right. So, you know, it might be interesting, Alaska, Vietnam, Africa, New York City.
Yeah, and all my photo galleries are by place because I've traveled a lot of places.
And so. I'm sure it's going to expand a lot. Thank you so much for coming by. Carl, you have anything you want to add?
Just thank you for having us.
Anytime.
Yeah, thank
okay.
you.
Tonight, 5 o'clock. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
There's nothing quite as powerful as the sound of a woman's voice. For over 35 years, Karen N. has brought you female singer-songwriters and instrumentalists on women's prerogatives.
In a bubble shaped like a beer bottle. Hey, what you doing today?
Women's Prerogative, music by, for, and about women. Thursday evenings at 7 on KRNN Juno. Thank you.
It is 15 minutes to the hour. It's August 24th, and you're listening to Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from Alaska's capital city, specifically the KTOO studios. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show, and as usual, we are ending the Thursday show with Nancy DeCherney of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. She's in the studio with us with her I Back the New Jack Button, which is all about the new Juno Arts and Community Centers.
Culture Center.
Juno Arts.
But it is the community. You got it right.
Culture Center, the new building, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
But let's talk about some immediate things, like maybe what's going on tonight and the weekend.
Well, tonight, actually today is Judge Wickersham's 160th birthday. You have it closes at 5 up there, but you can go up and celebrate at the House of Wickersham.
Interesting.
Yeah, cool. Think Like a Computer from 6:30 to 7:30 tonight, an introduction to coding at the Mendenhall Valley Library. It's for ages 8 to adult, and if you're interested in coding, this is for you. And I would imagine it's free because it's at the library.
It is.
From 7 to 8:30 is a Mudrooms, Falling Through the Healthcare Cracks. It's at Northern Light United Church. At this Mudrooms, inspired storytelling that begins a bigger community conversation about healthcare. So it's going to be a whole conversation about
interesting, like a problems. Special Mudrooms event. Sounds
fun. Yeah, exactly. So check that out, 7 to 8:30. On Friday, there's from 10 to 11, adult open ballet class at Juno Dance Theater. It's a technique class open for all levels from beginning to advanced, and they'll just adjust the class depending on who's in there. So I think the school season has started, so things are starting to start taking classes at the dance theater. From 5 to 8, there is a Senator Albert Kukesh Medical Fundraiser and Appreciation Dinner at the Elizabeth Paradovich Hall, $15 per person, and there's an auction, $10 for a person if they just want to do the auction part. There's a 50-50 raffle. There's dance performances. It's going to be a really nice time to help raise some medical costs for. Speaking of healthcare cracks.
We've got a theme going on.
Yes, me too. So, come out from that. That's 5 to 8 on Friday night. From 5 to 9, Alaska Agriculture in the Classroom is offered by the co-op Extension Service. This is for all levels of educators who want to teach about Southeast Alaska agriculture and help students learn about where their food comes from, which is kind of an important thing because most of us just think you go down to Foodland and get it out of the shelf there. But something else happens before that, so good to know. Friday Night Live at Alaska Fish and Chips Company at the Flight Deck every Friday through the summer. Still summer, despite what it looks like out there. So go on down for that. There's live music and all that sort of stuff. The Alaskan Hotel and Bar has Devil's Club at 10 p.m., no cover charge. Check that out. On Saturday morning from 9 until 2, it's the 10th Annual Food Festival. We have all sorts of things, and I'll run through the list here when we get all done with the week. From 9 to 4, it's Girls on the Run, new coach training at AWARE. It's a wonderful program, but it involves running. So. I'll be going to the food festival.
It's in the name. I think it might.
Okay. And from 10 to 11, the new whale, Taku, is going to be dedicated down at Overstreet Park. So stop in down there. And I believe the little bazaar is going to be open with coffee and refreshments.
So the whale's got a name.
Yes, it's Taku, spelled T-A-K-H-U.
Oh.
And so we'll be dedicating him or her.
Well.
The high school cross country invitational is over at Sandy Beach, so stop in there. Canvas is having a garage sale from 11 to 3. The every other Saturday drawing group at the Canvas is happening from 4:45 to 8, and they want you to not be late because they shut the doors at 5. So, and then there's Cornhole Saturdays at the Fish and Chips Company from 6 to 10. On Sunday, the Tongass Democrats are at Sandy Beach with hot dogs and chips and refreshments and all kinds of things. Live music by Rob Cohen Trio. It's an opportunity to meet the candidates. bring a donation of travel sites, toiletries, combs, razors, and stuff for the Front Street Market. So bring that down. Artists of all nations. This is something new that the Arts Council is going to do. We received a grant from the Rasmussen Foundation, and they asked us to do something new for artists. We had some artists come to us and say what we would really like to do is have a big space where we can just bring our projects, our weaving, our painting, whatever, and just work together. And so the jacket's going to be open on the last Sunday of every month from 1 to 5. Just bring your stuff on down and visit with other artists and be inspired by them. So,
that sounds fun.
Yeah, I think it should be. 2 to 3:30 is the Sacred Harp Sing at Holy Trinity. It's a cappella songs, and it's I don't think that you need have previous experience. 2 to 3:30 also, stand in solidarity with Charlottesville at Marine Park. It's a community effort to eradicate systemic racism and anti-Semitism. So come on down, feel free to bring a sign, listen, and have a chance to speak. The speakers will include Ernestine Hayes and Saul Neely, so stop in down there. Hopefully the weather will be nice for this outdoor stuff. On Tuesday, another adult ballet class from noon to 1 at the theater, Juno Dance Theater, so you can start that. There's a town hall meeting from 6:30 to 7:30 with Justin Parrish. That's going to be at the Mendenhall Public Library. At the planetarium, you can talk about the solar eclipse. And there will be a dance fitness class from 7:30 to 8:30 at the Juno Dance Theater. I think you should just go to their website and get the whole list of classes. So I think they're going to have a good series of classes. On Wednesday, there's Awana at Douglas Island Bible Church from 6 to 8 p.m., an English class out at the Public Library at 5:30, Ultimate Frisbee. Now, let's just talk a little bit about this food festival. This is the 10th annual one.
That's on Saturday, right?
Yep, that's Saturday morning starting at 9. It's free. There are going to be some workshops. At 9:30, Sarah Luce will talk about pickling. 10:30, Corinne Conlon will talk about foraging. Sarah Lewis will do canning at 11:30. 12:30 is home composting by the woman that does the Juno composting, Lisa Daugherty. And at 1:30, Ed Byarski will talk about primroses because they grow really well here. The various vendors that we know will be there is Ed's Edible Ed, Merriweather Farms, Juno Composts, Alaska Coastal Seafood, Tidalwood Food and Forage, Fungi Foraged Products, Orsi Organic, Farmer Eli Panhandle Produce, Harbor Tea and Spice, Mofish Seafoods, Barnacle, UAF Cooperative Extension, Juno Community Gardens, Douglas Community Gardens, Marms and Meeks, Stephen Evans Art, Northern Lights Glass, Thomas O'Shellfish, Sitka Spruce Design, Trinity Preserves, Riverside Herbs. The Salt and Soil people are in here a couple times, so maybe they have several booths. Naturally Juno Jams and Pies, the Natural Resources Conservation Service, Raven Lunatic, Rotary Bulbs, Peterson's Pretzels, the Caribbean Kitchen, and Juno's Green Basil, and the Jack, and probably some other wild stuff that we don't know about. And it's going to end with a concert from 1 to 2 by the Huckleberry Pickers. So come on, it'll be a little dance floor.
Saturday morning.
Yeah, come on down and enjoy that and then get out and do all the rest of the stuff.
Sounds good. So, you know, it's just like light work for the six of you over at the Juno Arts and Humanities Council.
Yeah, we just move those things around.
Yeah. Thanks for all that you do.
Sure, thanks for having me. We'll see you.
I like your button. I guess if anybody wants your button.
You can have a button. Yes. Come by the Arts Council and get a button.
I back the new chat.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're looking forward to a bigger, better place for food festival.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Thank you, Nancy. So let's talk about the weather. We talked about what would the weather look like for all these events coming up. So tonight we're looking at scattered showers and mostly cloudy. Southeast winds around 10 miles per hour, and the chance of precipitation is 30%. Tomorrow we're looking at a chance of precipitation is 100%, and it's just rain, low around 50. Tomorrow night it's about the same, 56, high near 56, and then southeast wind around 15 miles per hour. Friday night, rain. Saturday, showers likely with a chance of precipitation 60%, and then on Sunday, same chance of precipitation is 60%. Thanks for sharing your day with Jeff Brown and myself, Joan Pardis, and the Juno Afternoon
studio and all our guests. And if you want to listen to Juno Afternoon on demand, you could do that anytime at ktoo.org. Just search for Juno Afternoon, and you could listen at it at your leisure. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day. And tomorrow, Laura Scanling will be hosting the Friday Juno Afternoon, and she'll be finding out about the Neighborhood Day at Capitol Park, more about Saturday's Food Fest, and then upcoming Juno Symphony Wildlife Cruise, and then Laura Zahasky will be in the studio to preview this weekend's Mountain Music Festival. And then also, you'll learn a little bit more about some more UAS classes. Thanks for listening.